Good evening. This is the Voice of America in Washington. Welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'm Douglas Impulga. This evening, we'll look at the upcoming elections in Kenya. And with us tonight is my colleague, Vincent Macori. He's host of VOA Africa 54. Vincent is on assignment in Kenya and he's joining us from Nairobi. Good evening, Vincent.
Good evening, Douglas.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure.
You're welcome. Also joining us tonight is Fred Omulo. He's a Kenyan journalist. He's joining us by phone from Kisumu. Good evening, Fred.
Good evening, Douglas.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Gentlemen, as I said, our topic tonight, we're looking at elections in Kenya. Kenya heads the polls next week on August 8th with incumbent President Uhuru Kenyatta battling to secure a second five-year term. But while many expect Kenyatta to prevail once again, his opponent and longtime rival opposition leader Raila Odinga remains hopeful. Earlier in the campaign, the 55-year-old Kenyatta, who leads the Jubilee Alliance, had been expected to win easily, but that no longer looks certain. Vincent, let's kick off from there. First of all, the general situation in Nairobi, 4 or 5 days away from the election, and my observation here, according to analysts, that the winner is not very certain.
Yeah, the winner is not very certain. We had two different polls that were released a couple of days ago, and one shows Raila Odinga being ahead by about a point. The other one shows Uhuru Kenyatta being ahead by about a point or two. So if you look at those two and if you believe that perhaps you take, you know, give and take on the other each side, they're neck and neck, I think, at this point. It can go either way. Nobody can for sure say he's going to win this election. If the polls are to go by at this point.
I see. And how is the mood in Nairobi 4 days away from the election?
Well, there is tension in this country. There's anxiety around this time. You know, people still live in that trauma of what happened in 2007. And in as much as the 2013 passed fairly peacefully, but they do feel that the stakes this time around are also extremely high, perhaps at the level of 2007, and therefore many are concerned, really, about what happens after this election. But if you listen to the rhetoric on the campaign trail, the main presidential candidates really haven't helped the situation. They have, in a way, heightened the tension because each side seems to sound like if it does not win the election, it probably will not accept it, or rather, things will never be the same. The Jubilee Alliance, which is the governing party, sounds like it is 150% sure it's going to win this election. It doesn't see how it's going to lose this election. On the other side, NASA, of course, has said they will accept the results, but on a condition that if they're free and fair. Now, the question is, will they accept whatever results that come out that don't favor them as free and fair? So that has heightened the tension and, of course, the concerns among most in the sense that what happens when the results come out. Either way, nobody knows how the reaction will be.
I see. Fred, you are in Kisumu. That's meant to be Kenya National Super Alliance, NASA's stronghold. Tell us the mood over there and what are the people's expectations?
Actually, the mood is quite upbeat. The National Super Alliance was here today for their final rally in this region, for their final political, political ground stomping, if you could put it that way. And they had the message, the simple message that, I mean, 2 months ago, 1 month ago, we were 30 points, they were at 50 points. Today we are neck and neck. The tide is turning, and we are set to take this thing. We are set to win this election. But at the same time, there were a number of things that happened over the last week that are still fresh in the minds of voters here. Number one was a press conference that the NASA leader, Raila Odinga, called on Friday, in which he alleged that the military, a new crop of young soldiers, are being prepared to disrupt the election exercise on the day after election and on the day of election and the day after the election. And he gave all sorts of details, and he had all sorts of documents which appeared authentic. A few hours later, the military spokesman pops up and calls a media briefing, and he says, the documents are genuine, but the exercise we are conducting is not aimed at rigging the election. So immediately, the whole country was caught in a mood of apprehension. What is going on? Then on Sunday, the Electoral Commission, the IEBC, the Interim Electoral and Boundaries Commission, reported on its Twitter handle that their IT manager is missing. Now, the IT manager in the IEBC is not just anyone. This is the person who controls what is known as KIEMS, Kenya Integrated Electoral Management System. And this person is the one who is basically going to run the actual elections, from voter identification, biometrics, to tallying and everything, results transmission. They reported that on Monday. On Sunday, this person turned up to have been assassinated. So that even heightened the tension. It became, if it was at 100%, it jumped up to 200%. And the final thing that happened is what Vincent McCourty has just mentioned. The opinion polls came out on Tuesday, and they were all showing this leap in the NASA side. And it is basically a dead heat competition right now. If we go into the election as it is, the two sides are basically of equal strength. But one thing came out of those opinion polls. We might have to face a runoff, mm-hmm. A second round of voting to determine the winner, because as things stand, neither of the sides is capable of marshalling the 50+1% required for an outright win in the first round of voting.
I see.
So maybe I can give you more details as we continue the program.
Let me go to Vincent first of all. Fred there mentions the apparent death of the IT manager of the Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission. How are people in Nairobi taking it, and how is the government's reaction helping to assuage the people's anxieties?
First, you have to say that there's nobody in Kenya who does not, I'm saying there's nobody active as Dana Poor or a study, but everybody I speak to
believes
that the death of Msando had something to do with this upcoming election, had something to do with his position at the IEBC. This was the genius behind the electronic system, and he was very, very vocal about ensuring that he seals all the loopholes that could be used by anybody to interfere with this election. He's killing. In fact, it was on that day that he had come from one of those television interviews, where he was completely reassuring people that he will make sure there is no way anybody can rig this election, at least as far as the electronic system is concerned. He's killing at that particular time makes everybody believe that there was somebody somewhere who wanted to stop this guy. The manner in which he died, the torture, kind of in a way makes everybody believe that somebody wanted information from him. Who knows? Maybe some password, some information relating to how they could now get into the system, now that he was inevitably going to be gotten rid of. So anybody I've spoken to believes that his death had to do with this, including actually electoral commission officials. They don't believe there is a reason to believe that it has to do with this particular process. Now, how has the government reacted? For me, very typical. Of course, we are conducting election investigations. Next day, they'll tell you we have already arrested three people and we are pursuing very important leads that may lead to the unraveling of this mystery. Truth is, if you go by the history of this country, every time somebody is killed, somebody is murdered, police swing into action, somebody or a few people are arrested the day after, and that is the end of story. We wait for the resolution forever until we forget. can ask Guy Fred Omolo and remember the last time we resolved a case that is that involved the murder of a high-profile person or a really important police.
So, Fred, are the people there in that region? I'm asking about generally the whole region around there where you are. When they hear these things, and given the past experiences, are they anxious? Are they confident of the win, or do they think they could win and their win is snatched away?
There's a lot of talk of the outright win. The polls are showing it. The mood in the country and in the region is one of people wanting to come out and vote in and make sure the turnout is large. But there's also that conversation about there's this possibility that it might just be snatched from us. Now, I made a point this week. I had some private conversations with people within the IEBC system. And we are discussing this whole Kenya Integrated Election Management System. And it's the most robust election system Kenya has ever had. It is virtually foolproof, right? But the death of the ICT manager raises a lot of questions of whether it is going to stand the test of time, whether it's going to stand the test of tension and the difficulties that we have to face this coming Tuesday. So on the one hand, we have the best vehicle to get us across this election. But on the other hand, we have a lot of questions about who will be driving this vehicle and what will be their intentions. So that is the general's mood, if I can say. I can't really generalize, but that's my view.
I see. But Vincent,
that's what I've been seeing.
Vincent, at least Kenya seems to have moved the steps actually ahead in among many African countries. Because this time the opposition will have its own telecentres, the court ruled that results at the polling centres will be final and can't be altered. In other words, there will be no updates at the National Telecentre in Nairobi. If people are vigilant at the polling centres, at least that's a kind of as transparent as it gets.
You know, this is my take. First, I kind of have confidence that the IEBC has all intentions to deliver a free, fair, and credible election. The electoral commissioners were selected in a way that they're not necessarily an appointee of the government or anybody. This is a job that was openly advertised. Hundreds, thousands upon thousands of people applied, and they were selected because of their qualifications. The systems they have put in place, and even if you look at how committed they were through Mr. Msando, shows that they really have no interest in rigging the election or in messing up with the election in favor of anybody. Their credibility is on the line, and one of the things I think they want to do is to execute an election in a fashion that will earn the respect of everybody, not only in this country, but every outside of this country and elsewhere. The only concern is there anybody outside, or is there a more within the system who may want to infiltrate the electronic system? The concern and the worry, even around the electoral commissioners, and that's why Mr. Sandler was very critical, is actually some smart crook infiltrating the system and perhaps manipulating the transmission of the results. But given that now the results will be released at the polling station, it may be a little bit of a big challenge, because everybody is going to be vigilant to make sure that they can tally whatever is coming from the polling stations and look at what is the overall number. And it will be easy to know that perhaps there was some anomaly in that particular area. So I almost have a feeling that the Electoral Commission should be able to execute this very, 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 very well without having a lot of interference.
I see. Well, gentlemen, let's take a short break. Keep your thoughts. We'll be back again to continue our discussion of the upcoming election in Kenya. We'll be right back. Welcome back. In case you're just tuning in, you're listening to Reporters Roundtable, and we're coming to you live from VOA Studios here in Washington. Tonight, we're talking about the upcoming elections in Kenya. Our panelists are my colleague, Vincent Macquarie, host of VOA Africa 54, and Fred Omolo, a Kenyan journalist, and I'm your host, Douglas Impuga, here in Studio 6 in Washington. Now, gentlemen, we've been talking about the two main contenders. These two men, by the way, there are even other people who are running for president, whom we're not talking about. But these two men whose fathers led Kenya to independence nearly 55 years ago, Kenyatta and Odinga. Is this election about these two personalities, or is it about issues? Let me begin with Fred in Kisumu.
Well, it's a combination of both. We can't really say that it's about this or that. It's about the personalities. It's about the history between the elder Jomo Kenyatta and Jaramogi Oginga Odinga, who was the father to Raila Odinga. It's about issues as well, because the economy has had significant investment in terms of all sorts of infrastructure. But that has resulted in the ballooning of external debt, and this has affected the GDP and the budget of the country, which has trickled down to the grassroots level. So economics is at the heart of this issue, and it's at the depth and at the center of even the stronghold of the Jubilee regime, which is in power right now. They have their people there who are asking questions about how the economy is faring. Of course, there are other secondary issues like ethnic balance in appointments and whatnot. But at the end of the day, we had the Kibaki government for 10 years, which at some point was very skewed in terms of appointments, but was very stable in terms of the economy. So it didn't get the kind of conversation that we have right now. But at the same time, right now, Kenyans also have a lot of avenues and channels to vent and to express themselves. Radio is a very popular avenue. Social media has just grown. There's been a crazy explosion in that area. So you might think at some level that a certain conversation or a certain issue is quite big out there. But the truth is just these days people are expressing themselves more. The other issue is the fact that we now have millennials. We have people who are in age from 18 to, let's say, 28. These are people who didn't experience firsthand the battles against the tyranny of President Moi in the early 1990s. They didn't experience it. Either they were not born or they were too young to remember, right? But These guys, they are now here. They are also earning. They are in the workforce, or they are just ordinary laborers and traders and hustlers here in our midst. And for them, it is about an issue. They don't recognize these families. They never saw Jaramogi Oginga Odinga. Mm-hmm. They only heard about Jomo Kenyatta in the history books. So it's a balance between the two. The younger voters, let's say under 30, they are more about issues. The older voters, the more discerning ones, they also have issues. But there's also a huge segment of us here who are looking at the replay, or should I say the rematch, of the 1969 politics between Jomo Kenyatta and Jaramogi Oginga Odinga. So you can't really say. I mean, I think it's a balance between both areas.
I see. Vincent, you're in Nairobi, which is bigger and with a lot of people. And although the personalities of these guys is name recognition is known, but the election, according to most people, is largely being fought over the economy and, as Fred says, and the courting of the youth vote, because the approximately 80% of Kenyan population is younger than 35, and youth unemployment rate stands almost at 22%. So what do you notice in Nairobi? Are they also about these main issues, or as opposed to the upcountry where people are concerned about the skyrocketing food prices and the severe drought? What do you see in Nairobi?
I mean, those issues, in fact, yes, they are in play here. But just as Fred mentions there, it is a mix of things. You know, the people who reside in this city, a big chunk of the population are people who have the same mindset as people in the countryside. In fact, some of the people who have been living here are going to vote up country. As far as the issues are concerned, younger, the more, you know, inquisitive segment of the population is looking at the economy, looking at the development. And of course, many other Kenyans have been affected by the price of commodities, the shortages of unga, you know, corn flour or maize flour. But at the same time, you cannot really see any clear platform, no clear plan or strategy by any of the presidential candidates on how they're going to tackle these issues. As it has always been in all our elections, they are just general statements that are being thrown out there, some kind of general promises. The opposition NASA is saying, we'll ensure everybody has food, we'll make sure the prices are fair for coffee farmers, for tea farmers, we'll make sure that people will get a fair kind of treatment as far as land ownership is concerned. The other side, the Jubilee government takes credit for any development project that has taken place, but at the same time, that mentions certain programs and projects. The man of us has a real clear record of, you know, like, oh, we have opened 300 health clinics out there. Now, none of them can for sure sit down and tell you this is our exact plan, this is how we're going to tackle health care, this is our projected budget, this is how we want to raise the funds for this. And I mean, in a way, they're just general statements and general promises from both sides. And that's all I can say. And because of that, it can be so confusing that at the end of the day, it boils down to the charisma of the two candidates, who appeals more to the other. And that is why they don't bother to really go into the details of the campaign trail. They try to appeal to the people with a kind of a populist message without having any specifics.
I see. Fred, for one of the two to win this election outright, either man must gain 50% of the votes plus one, as well as at least 25% of the votes in half of Kenya's 47 counties.
Yes.
This seems to be really quite a feat. I mean, if the polls are as what they say and disclose, this may not be easy to pull off.
Exactly. It's an uphill task. And I guess the framers of this constitution that we are currently operating in, their idea was you have to move out of your comfort zone. After the experience of 2007 and the post-election violence, I think they wanted a scenario where the top two or top three challengers actually move out of their strongholds. And this is what is likely to bring about a neutralization of that overly ethnic politics that we have here in Kenya. So, for example, you have someone like Uhuru Kenyatta, the current president. He's had to do several tours here where I'm operating in Western Kenya, and this is not his traditional stronghold, but he's had to have to come here and actually beg for votes. The same thing the opposition leader, Raila Odinga, he's had to go into President Uhuru Kenyatta's strongholds in places like Central and Upper Eastern Province to beg for votes there. So it depends on what impact, based on the message that you took out there. Mm-hmm. And as my senior colleague Vincent McCauley has just mentioned, something I forgot to say, they are just issuing general statements, mm-hmm. whether in their strongholds or out there.
I see.
Right? So, yeah, so we might even end up with a scenario where whoever has the 50 plus one does not have the majority of the counties.
I see.
Those are constitutional questions that now keep a country on perpetual election mode, because you have reruns and you have petitions, and you might end up with 6 months or even 1 year of repeat elections and things of that nature.
I see. Vincent, if no winner is declared, as Fred says, the election will go to a runoff, which would be a first in Kenya's history. From your own assessment there in Nairobi, is the Electoral Commission prepared? And even then, how much time do they have between the Tuesday election and the runoff if there's no outright winner?
Well, I spoke to electoral commissioners. The Electoral Commission is ready, says it's prepared for a possible runoff. and especially given that this is a very tight race, they can anticipate that. They clearly anticipate a runoff. And right now, I think I've just lost track of the time period by which they have to do the runoff. Maybe Fred can refresh me on that. I kind of lost that particular number. But they told me they're ready to do a runoff within whatever time that has been stipulated by the law, and they have no problem doing that. So I believe they can execute that.
I see. Fred, do you share that optimism?
Yes, I do share the optimism. I mean, I was in the front line of the post-election violence, and I was also at the front line during the 2013 transition. So I want to be optimistic because I know how ugly Kenya can get when it decides to get ugly. And I do know, I tend to have more confidence in the IEBC than the ordinary Kenyan, even someone who is supporting the incumbent. I tend to have more confidence in the IEBC than them. I think that they are capable of doing it. And I also have a nagging suspicion. This is a fringe or minority belief, but I have a nagging suspicion that the IEBC will surprise everyone in Kenya, including both sides of the political divide.
I see. Vincent, go ahead.
Yes, one other thing I wanted to say is that the fear of the use of the military to rig the election, for me, I find it a bit unfounded because unless they use force, they let the election process is being conducted by the IEBC officials. So I personally have not had, I don't understand how the military or the police will help rig the election unless, of course, they literally force people to either not vote or take away the ballot boxes by force. I don't know.
I
so
see.
That is why I have confidence that the election commission should be able to do their job.
Okay, very, very briefly, both of you, beginning with Vincent in Nairobi. This Kenyan election, people have interest in it worldwide. How are the observers? Have you seen some of them? What interest are they? I mean, are they visible in Nairobi?
You know, they're visible. They have arrived. I think they should be having some briefing tomorrow, Saturday. A great number of other, critical minds don't pay a lot of attention to them because they say, this guy is just coming. They don't know what has been happening around here. They will of course, observe and sit down and release their statement. But I think I give more credence to the local observers who have been around here and have been studying the system. They will probably understand what happens than anybody just coming from outside.
Fred, very briefly, have you seen any in Kisumu there?
Yes, actually, you're mentioning it. Today, I was walking along one of the biggest streets in Kisumu. It's called Odinga Street. And I saw this four-wheel drive vehicle written there, International Observer. But besides that, for the last, since Sunday morning, actually, the IEBC itself has been conducting training for the officers and the clerks who will handle the election.
I see.
Part of the training involves EU observers. We have observers from the US as well, and all sorts of other interested parties that are participating. They are very keen, and they're following the whole process at every step.
I see. Okay, we're out of time. We'll be following on Tuesday what's going on. That's all the time we have for this edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'd like to thank our panel, my colleagues Vincent Macquarie, host of VOA's Africa 54, and Fred Omolo, a Kenyan journalist. Gentlemen, thanks very much for being on the show.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much, Doug.
Thank you. Our producer was Jackson Mufungani, and our engineer was Kip Sisk. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. A reminder that in case you missed any or part of this program, you can still access it by going to our main website and you find it there. You can also drop us a line. Our email is reporters@voanews.com. Thanks very much for tuning in. And until next week, I'm your host, Douglas Simpoga in Washington, wishing you all the best.